Hey, what's good, everyone? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to the Paychecks and Balances podcast, where we chop it up about working money for millennials with the hope we don't leave you saying, ba-da-ba-ba-ba, I hated it.
And you can tweet along to today's episode using hashtag or pound PayBal, and you can add us directly at PayBalances. If you have questions or topics you'd like us to cover on the show, email us at info@paychecksandbalances.com.
Also, shout out to those who left us 5-star reviews on iTunes over the past few weeks. So that's a special shout out to Kyle in Phoenix, Miss Delanda, Charm City Diva, Andy Macadamus, and Be Her. We appreciate y'all.
You know, I always appreciate the listener names as well. So special shout out, but not to ignore the others. You know, you got to have those types of disclaimers these days to Charm City Diva and Macadamus. I'm not sure what that means, but I like it anyway.
Have you been enjoying the show? By the way, that might just be the person's real name.
That would be interesting.
We shall see. I'm sure they'll let us know.
Oh, yeah. They'll probably let me know specifically if I got it wrong. If you've been enjoying the show, drop by and hit us with a 5 stars in iTunes as well. We might shout you out. If you don't know how, visit paychecksandbalances.com/review.
Word up, yo, or whatever obsolete phrase of your choosing you'd like to insert that makes the same point.
So, where's Bond?
Or that. So today we're joined by a mover and shaker in the cleanest way possible. Her insights have helped me get my stuff together. She's the host of the Behind the Brilliance podcast, Lisa Nicole Bell. Thanks for joining us.
I'm super excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, this feels like a long time coming. I feel like I meant to reach out. Oh, I know for a fact that I've had this in my Evernote for however long. And I was like, yo, I need to reach out. I've been listening to the show lately, hearing some dope things to further help me get my stuff together. So now seems like a great time to have you on. Also, given some of the stuff that we know a lot of listeners are struggling with, because you talk a lot about time management, goals, values, things like that, productivity, which we're definitely going to hit today. But to get started, tell the good people of Paychecks and Balances a little bit about your background.
Yeah, so my background has been a toggle between business and entertainment. I started my first company when I was 19 and have started two more since then. When I first got to LA, I was working as an actress. I was doing bit roles in film and TV, tons of national commercials, and I was going to school full time and running my business. So needless to say, I was team no sleep, and I was team they sleep, I grind. But I learned so much during that time about lifestyle design, because when you try things on for size, you get to figure out, you know, what you want your life to look like. Fast forward, I've written stuff, produced stuff, started things, made things. And so at the core of everything I do, I am a storyteller. So these days I run Inspired Life Media Group. We create original, premium, multi-platform content. That means film, TV, and digital. And right now we have stuff on all three of those platforms. We're in post-production on a documentary that I produced in Australia. We finished up a show for Viacom earlier this year, and we have a TV/digital campaign that we're working on with Dr. Oz, and then we're doing a digital project with Viola Davis. So aside from that, I write and I speak. I get to travel and speak. I was in Egypt in May and Boston in June, and that's fun. And I, like you mentioned, host Behind the Brilliance, which is a podcast I started really because I felt like I had a embarrassment of riches as it pertained to getting to have great conversations with people who were dope, smart, interesting, or successful. And I thought, you know, it would be amazing if I could like create Cliff's Notes or somehow let other people in on these conversations. And so I created the show to truly go behind the scenes of people that are perceived as interesting or successful so that other people can feel less alone on the journey to uncovering their brilliance. So that's me in a nutshell.
That is what's up on the most high of levels. Now, now you mentioned doing commercials. Now that's something I didn't know. So like, are you in like a Cheerios commercial? Are you dancing in a McDonald's joint? Like what's going on
with
that? Yeah,
I did a McDonald's commercial.
I was just joking.
Seriously. I did this big national K-Swiss campaign that was print and television. When K-Swiss rolled out the shoe with the tongue that twists, the one that you could flip and yeah. I wear my K-Swiss. I was yeah. one of the, I was the token black girl on that campaign. So my face was up in Hibbett's and all kinds of sporting goods stores across the country. And of course that made my family very proud, but yeah, I mean, you know, creatively I've put my toe in a lot of different pools.
So when you do something like that, do you get a lifetime supply of K-Swiss? How does that work?
Not a lifetime, but I did get a lot. And what's crazy is that, I didn't wear the shoes when I got them, because when you do those kinds of campaigns, they give you free stuff because that's just kind of how it goes. And if you're, you know, doing clothes or shoes or whatever, you wear them and you take them home with you most times. And so they sent me all of these K-Swiss shoes, but I wasn't really a K-Swiss girl at the time. I was still rocking Air Force Ones, Jabos and Rees, Shell Toe Adidas. Like, I wasn't really on the K-Swiss tip. And yep. so fast forward several years and I tried to wear them and people were clowning me like, is this girl really walking around in K-Swiss? Like,
that's like Jordache.
Yeah. I'm like, I will single-handedly bring the K-Swiss back, but that didn't happen. So
that's why I asked, because, you know, you get those lifetime supply deals, but then they're on that popular arc. You know, they're up there with Crocs and things like that of this nature. So I really can't even. I used to rock K-Swiss. I'm not going to lie. I had the white shell toes. You know, I'd switch out the shoelaces. So I'm like, but I can't remember the last time they occupied my closet space. That's why I had to jump in with that.
Yeah.
So you mentioned first company at 19. What was that? What was the starting point?
Standardized test prep. So I got fired from a job for insubordination.
Yo, it is crazy how common getting fired is to then leading someone to go off and do something great.
Oh, for sure. Because, you know, you have to get to a point where you're like, I am not a good employee. Like, I could force myself.
Time out. You know, you got to tell the insubordination story too. Just so you know.
Okay, I will. So you realize, you know, at a certain point, like, I'm not good at being an employee, and you have to ask yourself, why? Is it because you need an attitude check, or because you have a skill set that lends itself to entrepreneurship? So the insubordination story is, I was working for this software company, and my Myers-Briggs is INTJ. And what that means is that I have a ruthless obsession with efficiency, elegance, like anything that's wasteful, anything that wastes time. It just makes me crazy. Like, I get super anal about it. And so their process was very wasteful. And I figured out that I was able to achieve the same goal in half the time, and decided to just switch up my approach to how I was getting things done, because we were selling software licenses to corporate clients and they didn't like that. And so I got called into the office like, hey, you're not doing this by our policy and procedure manual. I'm like, yeah, but that takes twice as long. And I found a shortcut. And they're like, yeah, no, you have to do it our way. And I was just kind of like, I'm not really feeling that, though. Like, you're creating a lot more work for me for no reason. And they didn't like that. I was the only black woman there. So they extra didn't like that. I was also kind of going through a militant phase, but that's a separate conversation. So they were just like, we don't need your services anymore. And I went home and sat in my car in the garage and cried and was just like, what is life? And it was like, it wasn't the end of the world, because I had already set myself up to have multiple streams of income at the time. So it wasn't like rent wasn't going to get paid, but it was just the emotional stress of being let go in that way. And I called my dad so upset, and he was like, Lisa, if you think that you can run the company better than they do, then maybe you should start a business. Mm. And I was like, maybe I should, George, maybe I should. Now, the thing about it is, I had no idea how difficult it is to start and run a company. I mean, I had the benefit of youth and ignorance and a little bit of, bravado working in my favor. And so I was just like, okay, like, let me figure out what I can do. So I started out thinking to myself, we should weave personal development into standardized test prep and tutoring service. Because when you go to Sylvan or Kumon, they're going to come in and work math problems with little Timmy, and then they're going to leave. And I thought, well, what if we work the math problems with little Timmy, but we also talk to little Timmy about courage or about integrity? Parents flipping love that. because not only was their students' grades improving or the test score going up, but they also saw positive behavioral changes in their kid. And so the company started to grow like crazy from word of mouth. And I had to spend very little money on marketing. And as it grew, I would just reach out to my friends like, hey, where you work? Foot Locker? Okay, they're paying you $9 an hour. Come work for me. I pay you $25. And they're like, cool. So it was just one of those things that grew very organically. And it was like hustling out of necessity.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
Got it. Yeah, that's pretty. So I don't think I knew that was the first thing you did, but this did remind me that I wanted to chat a little bit more about entrepreneurship in particular. So, you know, there are a lot of people out there that listen to our show that have day jobs. Some are happy where they are and they have no aspirations of being an entrepreneur. And of course, that's completely fine. Then we have other people who have day jobs, like myself, who also want to do their thing. And then there's this other group of people that believe that they should start their own thing because entrepreneurship, at least online, seems to be the wave right now. And there's all of these people out there that claim to be experts in this and that. They're talking about the freedom they have, how they're no more or no longer living in chains. And you get people who actually start to feel bad about the fact that they're content doing their day job only. So do you have any thoughts on people who are struggling with that?
I am so glad you brought this up. Let me light a candle and some incense so I can get all the way into this.
Hand raised.
Listen, entrepreneurship is not any better than making a living working for someone else. I really wish that people would stop acting like it is some holy grail or some essential component of living a fantastic life. It's not. Because the thing about being an entrepreneur is that it's every bit as stressful and complicated as working for someone else. You still have to get up at the butt crack of dawn. And it's even harder because there's no place for you to clock in. Like, if you don't show up, no one's going to call you and be like, where you at? Why you ain't here? You ain't going to get a check. So you have to have super strong intrinsic motivation and you have to have Herculean amounts of discipline in order to do it. The other thing is, this is part of the reason I've had so many employees, and I use my fingers doing air quotes when I say that, on Behind the Brilliance, because I don't like this idea that like the only way to ball out and pursue your dreams is if you go out and start your own thing. It's not for everybody. Like, if all of us are entrepreneurs, who gonna work for us? Like, it doesn't even make sense. So it's like, some people truly are better suited to be the lieutenant. Like, some people are better at being third or fourth in command. And you really do have to be honest with yourself about what your talents and skills are best suited for and what your personality is best suited for and whether you want that kind of responsibility, and just be the best at what you are doing. Because many times people think, well, I'm not happy at my job, so that must mean I need to start a business.
Right.
No, maybe it means you need to get clear about your purpose and transition into a different industry, into a different role in your company, or into a different company. Like, it doesn't always mean that the default is go start your own business.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I spoke to someone at a conference recently. Now, they are an entrepreneur and they're starting to have success, but they were telling me how they got to a point where they hated their job and they just went and quit. And then they actually had to go back to work twice. So they're like, I hate this. I'm starting my own thing. This must be what I need to do. And so they went and did that and they weren't prepared and ended up quitting like two jobs and then having to go back to work because they just went and jumped into entrepreneurship without much thought. So in your mind, what do you think are kind of the core things that make someone successful as an entrepreneur?
One of the big things is discipline. I mean, I just think that's one of the things that's not particularly sexy and rarely talked about. But there's nobody there to tell you what to do. And there's nobody there to force you to do it when you don't feel like it. So you have to become your own boss, not in the sense that, oh, I don't work for anyone, I'm my own boss, but in the sense that you have to crack the whip on yourself. You have to know how to say to yourself, you need to get that done. I know you don't feel like it. I know it's 6 o'clock and everybody else has gone outside to play, but you have work to do. So you're going to work until 8:30. Discipline is a huge thing. Another one would be communication. When you think about all the great CEOs, they are outstanding communicators because that's their job, is to craft a vision for a company, to build a brand and identity for what it is that they do, and then to disseminate that to their team, to their stakeholders, to the public. And so the communication piece is a huge part of it. I also think conflict resolution and interpersonal relations is huge. Like the number of different types of people and personalities that I have to deal with on any given week is insane. And so I have to be a chameleon in my ability to talk to a team member and motivate them if they're down, frustrated, behind, whatever, talk to a client and manage expectations or get what we need in order to churn out some deliverables, talk to a strategic partner about what we're trying to accomplish and be excited and be on the same page, talk to a writing partner about a script, talk to an editor about what needs to change, talk to a programmer about a website. I mean, like, I have to just be a generalist in that way. And that means that I have to read a lot and talk to a lot of different kinds of people and just be curious. So those are the things I think are most important in the beginning anyway.
Yeah. And so, you know, I'm thinking about myself and, you know, having done a website before it was doing pretty well. And there and Marcus was a part of this, too. And there was like five of us. And I think one of the things that I struggled with most was actually probably the conflict resolution part of it, because I'm an INFP. So I did that 16personalities.com test and it was like, oh, you're a mediator. And basically, you know, when I did that personality test, it read me for both filth and cleanliness. And you know, it was so eye opening in terms of like me understanding who I am and why I do what I do. And then also not feeling bad about it, because there are times where I'm like, why is this such a struggle for me? Is there something wrong with me? And it turns out it's not just me. It's just part of my personality. And there are some things that I have to work even harder to overcome. And I mention this because with the conflict resolution piece, I can think of so many situations where as the person leading the website, I should have just made a decision, but I was so focused on harmony and consensus that things would end up taking weeks or in some cases months because, you know, I wanted to make sure that everyone was on the same page and everyone felt good about it. So, any thoughts on that part of it for the people who kind of struggle with being able to really put their foot down and do what needs to get done or tell someone that they ain't doing what they need for things to get done?
Yeah, I mean,
since we're just tossing personality types out there, I just want to say I'm an ISTJ, you know, for the folks keeping track at home. You know, you can Google all these later.
Shout out to all the introverts. I think a lot of it is, and this goes back to what I was saying about the level of responsibility and the burden of entrepreneurship that's not often talked about. That's part of why people describe it as being lonely, because you do have to make difficult decisions. And oftentimes you will be disliked by people that you pay. And you have to find a way to be graceful about that and know how to get people on your team, even when their personality type is like the functional opposite of yours. So I think part of it is developing your own framework around how you resolve conflict. So my secret, I don't know if I should be sharing this publicly because then everybody's going to be like, now I know how to get her. But my secret is a well-structured question. Most of the time, when someone says or does something that we don't like, we're ready to clap back, right? We're like, let me get you together. But we're prepared to make a lot of declarative statements to that person. Mm. The thing about it is, if you're trying to get to an outcome, you need to ask questions. Someone's done something you don't like. My first question is always, can you explain why you did that? Because I probably don't understand how you thought about whatever it was that you did. And it may be that once you explain it, it makes sense to me too. But at the very least, I'm starting a dialogue with you that keeps you from feeling like I'm attacking you and feeling like you need to be defensive with me, because I'm not trying to be right. I'm trying to get stuff done. And you have to prioritize that over everything else.
Mm. Now, when we look at kind of where we are as a show, it kind of feels like we're at the beginning of our journey with the podcast as a real business. And we've been joking a lot recently, like, are we entrepreneurs with this?
Yes.
And it's getting to a point where we just, and it actually got to the point where we were like, you know what? This is what it is. We can't avoid it. We can't teeter on this line. We got to be deliberate about it. But then, of course, we also have day jobs, you know, and we're talking before the show about how I've started getting up earlier to get a couple more hours out of the day. So what advice would you have for someone that's kind of just getting started with what's most likely their side hustle and they're kind of trying to figure out how to navigate that and have time to be able to do everything that needs to get done?
My general philosophy is that you make time for the things that are important and you make excuses for everything else. So I do this myself, and I'm constantly saying to Behind the Brilliance listeners that you need to do a time audit, which just means that from Sunday to Saturday, you account for every moment of your day, including the time that you are sleeping. Most people are wasting way more time than they realize they are on nonsense. Love and hip hop, choosing what shoes you're going to wear to work, figuring out what to eat, like just time that's burned on things that are not essential to the outcomes you say you want to create in your life or in your career. And when you do the time audit, ish gets very, very real. It's no different than the food diary where you're like, damn, I had 8 Doritos.
Yo.
I didn't even realize, yo.
Yo, and my fitness pal has...
blowing up your spot.
Yo, that was whenever I've lost weight, and I think this last stretch where I'm like the lightest I've probably been since like high school, my fitness pal did exactly that, where I could see like, man, I'm eating this much, like this, like I thought I was eating healthy, but I'm also eating all these little snacks throughout the day. And so it sounds like it's the same type of thing that people do with their time.
It totally is. And so you start to see where all the holes are, where your time is really going. And what you realize is like, it's not a lack of time that's the reason you can't get everything done. It's all the ridiculous stuff that you actually spend time on that you need to let go of. And sometimes that just means a general restructuring of how you spend your time. And sometimes it means just straight up like, why are me and Keisha and Tammy going to happy hour every single Thursday? Like maybe we need to trim that back to every other Thursday, like little things like that where you're like, even if you found an extra 2 hours in your week, what could you do with that? Like, what could you do with 8 hours a month or 96 hours a year? Like a lot of stuff if you put your mind to it.
Yeah. Now, I've actually found myself in the process of doing a bit of a mini spot audit. I spend an inordinate amount of time like writing emails, and it's something I've had to get better at. Like, you know, and I think it's part of my personality too, where I'm sitting there and depending on who I'm emailing, I'm like wordsmithing, trying to figure out the perfect way to say something. And my question is, it's like a yes or no question. And it's like, hey, and then I've like written a paragraph, put the email away, opened it back up. And so that's probably a way that people even lose time too, is just by not being intentional and instead probably worrying too much about what the other side is going to think. Now, of course, you want to be considerate, but at the same time, there's a balance between being considerate and getting things done in a timely fashion.
Oh my goodness. Yes. So we have a rule in my business that we don't do meetings when calls will suffice. We don't do calls when email will suffice, and we don't send emails when we can find the answer on our own. This has cut down on a lot of wasted time because I don't think people realize it. Like when you ask someone to meet with you or to get on the phone with you, that costs money. Like it literally, like when I'm on the phone and the conversation's not going anywhere, I can feel the money burning in my ear. I'm like, this is costing money and it's not productive. So there's that piece of it. But then the other piece of it is like, you're right. A lot of people try to make their email sound like Shakespeare. And when I reply to people, I'm like, I'm going to give you what you need, but it's not going to be like, salutations, Rich. A lovely day we're having, isn't it? Fall is here and the leaves are changing. How that are you today? It's like, nah, yo, perfect. Great. Got it. Done. See you then. Like, you just have to move on, especially if you get a ton of email. You literally don't have time to talk that way to everybody. So, yeah, it's like one of those things where you have to practice processing your emails more quickly. And I also think you have to teach other people how to relate to you on email. Because if they believe it's okay to send you 10 emails in a day and to go back and forth like it's chat or Slack or something, then that's what they're going to do. But if they realize that, like, oh, this person actually does deep work and therefore doesn't spend all day on emails going back and forth, therefore I need to be thoughtful about what I say to them in this message, then it gets a lot more efficient.
Now, you know what I've noticed? The way that executives send emails versus more individual contributor level employees. And I've started trying to send emails like executives. So when you get an email from a really important person, their emails are so brief. It's like literally one line, not even their full first name, just their initial. It'll be like, yes, do that, R. And, like, and at first I was just kind of like, oh man, this person was really short with me. But I realized when you're as busy as these folks are and as busy as even we're becoming, we don't have time to sit and think of the most perfect way to say something. You just, you just get it out there, get it off your to-do list, because there's also that mental space element of it as well, you know?
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. I am the queen of the brief and direct reply. And also, like, when people are rambling and they're not getting to the point, like being able to cut through that with a question that is like, what is the next step we need to take? Because you just wrote four paragraphs and it's a lot of words, but you didn't say anything.
Yeah, which is never the wave. And I think we've all been there at some point in our career, where we're, especially when we're early on trying to make a good impression. I'm like, you know what? I got to flex these writing skills. I was writing blogs. So that means I could write dope emails. And then the person's like, Rich, you probably could have just said that in the first sentence, bro. And I'm like, okay, that's not going to happen again. Now you opened the door to something that I heard you talk about on the podcast, and it's this idea of these four costs, you know, and I thought about it when you talked about the whole idea of time is money. I'm hoping you know what I'm referring to.
The four costs.
So it's like time, money, and there were like two others.
There's time, there's money, there's energy for sure. And resources. Those would be the four.
Yeah, and those are things that I don't think a lot of people think about when they're making a decision, you know, when they choose to go to some event. And I've struggled with this too. It's like, oh, this event is happening. I should be there, but I know that me being there means that I'm going to be exhausted when I leave. My voice is probably going to be gone, and I have an interview to record tomorrow. So by me going to this event, not only do I drain myself of energy, I'm also setting myself up to not be as effective the next day.
Yeah, I think part of this is about self-awareness and being intentional, you know, about your time. But part of it is like when somebody hears, oh, this is free. It's like, no, it's not actually free. There's a cost associated with everything, whether you know how to do the math on that or not. And once you get really clear about the fact that you have a limited amount of mental power and decisions that you can make every day, a limited amount of physical energy that you can exert, a limited amount of money, of time, then it becomes much easier to negotiate with yourself and other people around what you're willing to invest those things in. Because if you don't respect them, other people won't either. The invitations for coffee and lunch and Lil Wayne concerts and all this other kind of stuff, you're just like, but what is the real opportunity cost of that? A great example would be Beyonce's most recent concert. And this is not an ounce of shade. So Beehive, do not at me, because you don't want to see me in my mentions. So the thing is, people were like, oh, I'm going to the Beyonce concert. People were very hyped. A friend of mine got, quote unquote, free tickets to go to the concert. She's so excited. But what she didn't realize was that you got to buy an outfit. You got to drive over there. And the parking was a complete nightmare. I don't know if it was that way in every city, but when she came here several months ago, it was disastrous. I'm talking about like it took people 90 minutes plus to get out of the parking lot after the concert was over. So you have the time required to get there, the actual concert itself, whatever concessions and all of that that you're going to do before or after, and then all of the time required to get out. Now, if you feel like that's a great investment of your time for entertainment and recreation, then great. But really, it wasn't free. It costed you about 6 hours of your day on a Saturday. And this particular person swears up and down that she's trying to make her dreams come true and she's tired of working for the man and all this other kind of stuff. It's like, well, that's the trade-off that you have to make. And this, again, is part of why I say like entrepreneurship is not this glamorous thing, because it might mean that you don't get to go to the concert because you got to work. Like, that's what it takes.
Now, I also want to talk a little bit about, you know, of course, time management some more. And that's pretty much what I'm trying to do throughout this episode. You know, there's the productivity, values and goal side of things, and in particular values. So I guess, when did you realize that you needed to really define your values, and kind of what was the process you went through to do that?
I woke up one day and was unhappy and could not figure out why. I was like, why do I just feel generally dissatisfied with my life as I am experiencing it? And going back to this audit thing, I just feel like in general, when you put things on paper, your thinking becomes much more clear. And so I sat down and wrote out like, okay, what is my life right now in every area? Like in my physical wellness, in my spirituality, in my relationships, in my career, money, what is my life really? What is it really? And I realized that certain areas were much, much better than others, and I couldn't figure out why. And then I thought, well, what's actually important to me? And it was just a lingering question. I was like, I don't know, I guess being happy, that's not really a thing. So I was like, I need to figure out like I need something to guide what I'm doing, because I feel like a ship without a rudder. And that was when I had the aha moment of like, oh, values, that's the thing that you use as your North Star, as your guide. Because I was also having a really hard time making decisions at that time. Like somebody would ask me to do something or an opportunity would come up and I would be like, I need like Jack and Coke and a cigarette just to get through thinking about this decision. And it was like, why is every decision so hard? And the reason was because I didn't have any values where when someone says, do you want to do this? I can literally sit down and go, well, I know my top five values are this. And I know my top five objectives for my life are this. And so does this support my pursuit of these things or not? No? Okay, cool. Thank you so much. I'm honored that you thought of me. I'm going to pass. Or yes, it does. Great. Let's do it.
That's an excellent point. Yeah, we talk a lot, especially.
If you're like me, you probably hate grocery shopping. And if you're like me, you probably hate figuring out dinner every night. And that's where HelloFresh comes into play. So HelloFresh is the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking fun, easy, and convenient. Each week, HelloFresh creates new recipes with step-by-step instructions designed to take around 30 minutes for everyone from novice chefs like myself to seasoned home cooks. And one of the best things about this is if you're cooking just for yourself, each meal could last you 2 days. I discovered that when I was making this sizzling beef stir fry last week. I promise you, it really was sizzling. And if you're wondering how the food gets delivered, it arrives at your doorstep in a special insulated box for free, 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 free. So for $35 off your first week of deliveries, visit HelloFresh.com and enter paychecks. Again, visit HelloFresh.com and enter paychecks when you subscribe. Check it out.
Recently, for the folks who have been listening, about a personal vision or personal mission statement, which I think is going to be the equivalent for your values as we're talking about here. But one thing that I was jotting down is I think people, it's not sexy. So I'm glad that we've gotten that out the way, and it's not very exciting. It actually is pretty frank, but people don't know the value of their own time. They literally don't know how much an hour is worth to them. And I was talking to Rich on a show, which I do all the time, and the folks know, like, I sat down and said, how much money do I want to make a year? Which most people don't even go through that exercise. And then I translated that to how much would I need to make a day? It's $205. And then if I wanted to take 4 weeks of vacation, it's $223. And then how do I translate that to my day to day? So there literally be some days that I'll wake up and I might have a decision like that. I'm going to go with the Beyonce one, but I don't think that'll be the decision that I was struggling with. But just because to keep this metaphor together. So what I'll do is I'm like, all right, I go out here and I know I'm going to spend my time, which is X dollars amount an hour. So I'm not going to leave this house till I come up with something that makes me $223, because that's how much I need to make today in order to align with my values, missions, goals, and a personal mission as it went here. And I don't think most people take a step back and do that. Like, they go and the paycheck defines them, our raise defines them, our company defines them. Their value is determined by how much someone else will pay them. And they haven't sat down and said, you know, how much is my worth? How much is an hour of time? And I just use a dollar amount, but you can use whatever that's tangible and relatable to you, worth to me. And then I think it's easy for folks. So, yes, if I go to this Beyonce concert and I spend 6 hours and, you know, it's $10, you know, that's $60. Like, is this, you know, $60 of my time worth? And how long is it going to take me to make that back, or whatever that might look like? And I don't think most people have sat back and took that step, because they're like, oh, it's the weekend, I wasn't going to make any money anyway. Your time is intrinsic. It has value regardless of how you're spending it.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. What you're saying is so brilliant and so spot on. I completely agree. I also feel this way about knowing when and where to spend money. Sometimes people look at me sideways because I have this woman come and clean my house. But I'm like, first of all, I believe that this is why I pray and act right so I can go to heaven, because I believe that in hell is like cleaning house all day long. You just never stop cleaning up. I don't enjoy it. So let's start there. Like, that alone makes it valuable. But also, the amount of money that I pay her to do it is way less than what an hour of my time is worth. And so the combination of she can do it faster, easier, and better than I can, and I don't enjoy it, means that's a worthwhile investment. And to your point, like, it's no different than when people are like, well, you know, if you eat that donut, that's an hour on the treadmill. Well, it's the same thing. It's like, you know that if you play Call of Duty for an hour, that's X number of dollars that you have to make back. So that awareness is like super important because, like you're pointing out, even when you're having leisure time, you just have to say, like, even for the leisure parts of my life, what do I want that to look like? It's really all about being intentional so that you can have fewer regrets in terms of how you live your life.
Yo, you just reminded me of something that I was talking about on Twitter. Actually, we had an exchange about this, and I was talking about like how much I hate grocery shopping. Like, it is a draining experience. And I saw you tweet about putting groceries away and then ordering takeout. We've done that many a time. Like that's just normal. It is assumed that if we grocery shop, external food will be had that day. like that's just what it is. And go ahead, man.
Did you see that tweet I put up with the sad dog where you wait till you're hungry to start cooking and then realize it's another 20, 30 minutes to actually cook?
The worst.
I didn't see that.
Like, do you know how often I've gone through this exercise? It's like a few times a week. I'm like, I'm not really hungry right now. I wait. And then by the time, like, again, going back to the value of time, which is literally hypocritical to what I just said, I'm like, I'll just wait till I'm hungry. And then I'm like, damn, I have to cook during the hungry period. Yeah, yes. It's a miserable experience.
Or you snack while you cook. I'm about to eat these chips while I am making this saute. Yes, judge away.
Pick a couple pepperonis off the pepperoni pizza. Yes, I've been there.
Yeah, it's always a struggle. But I realized from doing that time audit that we spend 2 hours a week just figuring out what we're going to eat for dinner. And and it was a routine that, and I hadn't thought about it before, but I come home. What do you want to eat? I don't know. What do you want to eat? Well, I don't really have a taste for anything. Well, how about this? I don't want that. Now, you can imagine who's saying what.
You're like, is this a Seinfeld episode that never ends?
And then I thought about it. I'm like, okay, so after we spend 10 minutes hashing out dinner, then I have to go and get it if it's not a place that delivers. And so then maybe that's 10 minutes each way. So that's 30 minutes just figuring out and getting something to eat. So actually, it's more than 2 hours. And so we started using Munchery, which is one of those meal delivery services out there. Now, no, they are not a sponsor of the show, but they have a couple of options. They have the meal kits where they send you everything and you just prepare it in 15 to 20 minutes. That's still too much for us. We don't want to do anything. And so we just order all of our meals for the week. So Monday through Thursday night, we'll have dinner delivered every night. And yo, the amount of time that we've gotten back to where we can just come home, have a conversation, not have the annoying, well, I don't know what I want. Do you know? I don't want that. Like not being able to, or not having to have that conversation every day has actually like increased the productivity of us just being able to enjoy time with each other. And then also it has given us time to focus on some of the other things, whether it's catching up on stuff from work during the day or if it's working on our passion projects, you know. So maybe that means it's an extra hour I now have, or an extra 2 hours I now have throughout the week to work on podcast things for her. That means it's more time for her to work on writing her book. So, you know, I definitely believe in this idea of when there are ways to save money, especially when you're valuing your time. Well, I guess in this case, you don't really save money. You end up spending a bit, but that trade-off of the time that we get back versus what we're spending, it was definitely worth it. Of course. I am not looking back at this point.
Yeah, no, of course. And there are things that you have to spend money on anyway that sometimes if you spent the money differently could yield so much more value. Like, that's just really important. And this goes back to the values thing, because once you get clear about what those values are, then all of the agonizing over decisions just becomes non-existent.
Now, the other interesting thing I'll say real quick, and I think, Marcus, it sounds like you're about to chime in there. Now, a lot of times we go grocery shopping, we buy stuff, we put it in the fridge, and then just spoils because we don't cook. So, go ahead.
That's such an American way of doing things.
Yeah, it was actually insane to me that you heard me about to say my thought, because literally all I did was take a breath, and I was about to say something. So that is insane.
We in sync, brother. We in sync.
Look at this romance.
The example I was going to use to kind of bring it home to folks is someone asked me recently, and I didn't even get the question. They're like, man, how do you stay on a budget? Like, you know, you got out of debt and everything. Like, how do you do that, man? It's so amazing. This is that. I'm like, I just don't spend money, man. But what I realized is when you have that priority alignment, that lifestyle design, that value stream, and it's in alignment, it's like any other exercise. Like the hobby or the mindset of me using are framing how I spend money is like intrinsic to me now. Like it's not an exercise. I really don't even try that hard. I'm like, man, that costs money and I'm not going to do that. Whereas most people are like, man, I'm going to spend money. I'll figure it out. Like as my dad said, you got a lot more money left at the, more money left at the end of the month or end of the check than month left at the end of the month is, you know, when you've been doing these things for a long time, I think people are probably listening and I'll use a real life example. So I realize now in hindsight, and I don't like to apologize because I am an ISTJ. I'm a Scorpio on the disc personality. I'm a D on the color profile. I'm a yellow. So I really got nothing going for me as far as my stubbornness goes. But I'm going to need to offer an apology because I realized I was looking back at as far as how you align time and it wasn't aligning with my priorities. And what I was doing is taking a single mindset in this particular incident. Why this is so difficult for me to apologize for. And the person probably listening to the show is I was working a 9-hour schedule so I could be off on Fridays. I was working a flex schedule and I still work a variation of this schedule now. But two things was happening. In an effort to work 9 hours, then hit the gym and the drive time between work and home, I was basically doing a 12-hour day. So I was so exhausted that I didn't want to do anything on Friday, which was my off day anyway. And I didn't want to do anything after I got off work. So I was just, as Rich was saying, I was just exhausted all the time in this effort to have a quote unquote flex schedule. And I was looking at this now and I was like, you know, I could go back to working eights, which and that's going to give me an hour back in my day. I'm going to get out earlier, so I'm going to be out of traffic, so traffic will be less. I'll be in the gym out faster. The gym will be less crowded because people aren't off at 5. So I'll probably, in flexing that schedule back to a regular 8-hour, will get actually 3 hours back to my life. And I'll be less exhausted in the evenings. And although I won't be off Friday, I'll probably be so not exhausted from those 9, 10, 12 hour days that I'll actually be able to have energy to do something on Friday. And I was looking at all that in totality and I was like, she was right. But I mean, what I was saying there and kind of trying to bring that home is when you don't take that step back to look at your priorities, then your decisions, you don't have that, what I talked about on another show, that congruence, because you're not thinking that. You're just reacting. Like, okay, like Rich said, like, I'm hungry now. I'm going to find something to feed it now. You know, I want my home clean. Okay, I wait till it's dirty. You know, I wait till it's dirty. I wait till I can visibly see dirt, then I start cleaning. Mm-hmm. And if you have that mental alignment, like, you know, I'm going to get a head start. We talk about a 2-minute exercise on the show where if it's less than 2 minutes, I'm going to do it now because I'll spend 60 minutes procrastinating on the activity that only takes 120 seconds to complete. Uh-huh. But once you get into that habit, it's a lot easier. So I think folks just need to, if you're kind of wondering where to start, and an example I'll use is people ask me, you know, how you speak in public, you know, you get in front of a room and you start talking, you don't stutter, you look really confident, how you do it? Well, and the answer is always you start talking.
Yeah.
And like people want this magic, like, oh, you know, did you do exercise outside where you listen to the, you know, 50 Cent, you know, how'd you get hyped up? I'm like, no,
Fetty Wap. Thank you.
Right. I just go up there and start talking. Actually, yeah, I do usually listen to 50 Cent, depending on the speech that I'm about to give. But yeah, I mean, these magic answers aren't always that magical. Sometimes it's literally just getting in the habit of doing the process.
There's this idea that, you know, anything that we see manifest in our reality is manifest twice, first in the mind and then in the physical world. And I say that if you're trying to get more intentional, everything that manifests in your life needs to manifest three times, first in your mind, then on paper, and then in your life. Because if you're, and that's the whole thing about budgeting, right? Like people are like, that feels too constraining, that'll ruin all my fun. It's not about not having fun. It's about having your fun be something that you're in control of instead of it controlling you. So I really do subscribe to this idea that I spend every dollar on paper before I spend it in reality, because that prevents what you were just saying about there being more month than money when you get to the 31st. And I like to spend my time on paper too. Sometimes when people are like, well, I don't understand why you couldn't just spontaneously go to whatever on a Tuesday. I'm like, well, because that the thing that I had planned to do on Tuesday when I woke up Tuesday morning was more important. And so I don't think people realize how easy it is for time and money to get away from you unless you are super intentional about mapping out where you want it to go.
Now, aren't those also the things you said show people where their values really lie? I think I heard you say that before.
Absolutely. If you want to know what's important to you, review your bank statement and review your calendar. Like, people can try to say, I value my family and my spiritual. No, you don't, because your calendar says that you spent 6 hours last week watching Wives and Girlfriends Miami and Housewives of whatever city. And your bank statement says that you went to In-N-Out 3 times and you also went to Applebee's. So no, you don't. Like, maybe you aspire to value those things, but right now you don't. And I think, again, when you put those things on paper and get really clear, like, oh snap, how did I spend $150 on alcohol last week? Like, what was I going through? Then you can say, all right, I need to regroup. Like, I need to switch this up. And then the following week you can make a change. But I just feel like until you get really honest with yourself and put that in black and white where you can see it, you can't confront it.
Yeah. I was reading a book called YOLO actually recently. We got it at FinCon. And he was talking about a mental budget is not a budget, because people have this fallacy or estimate of what they actually do. Mm-hmm. And I think there's another quote is, we judge others on their actions. We judge ourselves on our intent.
Ooh, sizzle.
Where's the offering tray? Let me put my monies in.
Where's my soundboard? Do I have a sound effect? No, I don't. Keep going, man.
Appreciate it, man. It's the thought that counts. But I actually shared this with a listener, so I'll speak to it on the show. You don't have to read the book, but I had to look it up here. It's called Influencer. It's from the same authors of Crucial Conversations. I've taken this training 2 or 3 times, which I guess it hasn't helped because all those personality traits I talked about earlier. So I actually think I'm a pretty good communicator, but apparently I'm too straightforward for some people's taste. And one thing that they talk about in the influencer is it was 6 motivating factors. So most people, they make a decision and they act. And they found that for it to actually stick, you had to be motivated in 6 different factors for it to truly stick, and at least 3. And it was like motivation, emotional, and I forget the 3rd one. But the point being that the reason people fall out of these habits and these hobbies is I don't think they've had alignment with 3 motivating reasons why this is important to me. You know, if you come up with 1, it's, you know, easy. Like, if you're on the diet, it's like, well, I'm gonna have this donut, you know, I'm just doing it for me. But if it's like, I'm doing it for me, for my heart health and for my wife and children, so I can live to, you know, walk my daughter down the aisle, that's a lot difficult. And that ties into emotional, that ties into the justification, that ties into the mental, versus, well, you know, I'm just going to do it because this is the mood that I'm feeling. Whereas, like, man, I might not, this action might prevent me from walking my daughter down the aisle. That's a lot more difficult to break to yourself. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of been an evolution, as I say, because some people, it's funny now that the book is out there, because I wrote the book and I can see my voice changing. It took 3 years. So I wrote it from 27. Started at 27, but really finished around 30s. So I can see my mindset changing throughout the book. And then now that I'm looking back, yeah, I tell folks, they're like, you know, that seemed really easy. And I was like, I probably oversimplified that, because that was actually a very difficult process. And now what I try to tell folks is I'm trying to be sympathetic to, yeah, it's not just a mindset change. Like, I was rock bottom, living paycheck to paycheck, paycheck to paycheck, broke, begging for a loan. So it was not as simple as, I'm just going to go out and get my life together. Like I had to, you know, get all the way to the bottom. So I'm trying to tell folks now that you need to find 3, ideally 6, maybe a longer list than that, motivating factors for why you want to make this change. Because I think, as we're talking about here, a lot of people are like, oh, it just sounds good. Like, oh, I'm Christian. You know, I'm going to get out of debt. I'm going to be debt free. Just make these declarations.
I'm Christian.
Yeah. I mean,
what does that even mean?
Well, exactly. Like, Jesus take the wheel, you know, all these quotes and sayings, and that's cool. But if you're saying that week to week, then you probably haven't set up a solid foundation for staying solid. Like you said, like, when you look at your bank statement, if there's not an alignment there, you know, actions speak louder than words.
All day. Yeah. You know, the other thing is that once you know what those motivations are, to review them every day. Like, some people are like, I review my goals on my birthday and the end of the year. Like, how do you stay motivated if you don't even know why? I don't know about other people, but my motivation ebbs and flows. And some days I'm just not in the mood. And so like every single day, I need to revisit my why and be clear about why I'm doing what I'm doing. And I mean, that's the only way that I'm able to stay disciplined. If I only reviewed my stuff twice a year, oof, I would be working at Lady Foot Locker and have orange acrylic nails and a waterfall hairdo and just be like, you know what? I'm just going to coast through life.
I think I dated somebody that did fit that description, by the way.
How'd that go for you,
like,
brother?
I was like, dang, did they know her? Damn, man, I'm getting exposed on the show. It went aight.
I'll let you leave it at that. Now, this idea of doing a periodic review, it reminded me of something else you said on the show. And this is also kind of weird to me because a lot of times, like, we talk to guests, I don't know them that well, whereas your show, like, I've known it for, like, years now. And so I've heard a lot of things. And I'm like, it's not new to me, but it's probably new to a lot of people. And this idea of where you may have goals or things that you continually do, and it's this idea of changing periods to question marks. So,
oh, yes.
So can you talk a little bit about that? So that one, I could tell you know exactly what I'm talking about. So I'm not going to give you any additional context because you got it.
Yes. The first time I think I publicly talked about that was during my TEDx talk, which was, 5 years ago. And since then, I constantly say that because what happens, especially once you get over like 25, is that you get into your whole adulting routine. And you set these goals for yourself and you think you have an idea of where you want to go. And then by the time you get to your late 20s, early 30s, you don't realize that you as a person have changed. And therefore, all of your goals, your values, the things that you're aspiring to in terms of your lifestyle need to change with you. Those things need to evolve. Sometimes the reason that we feel that frustration or that disconnect is simply because the goals that we are now pursuing are outdated. They're really for the person we were 2 or 3 years ago, and we've evolved in a different way. So I like to turn all of those things to question marks because going back to Marcus's point, when you do that, you get to ask yourself, like, was whatever my original motivation, is that still applied? Like, is that really still what I'm excited about? Like, if I was doing this because I wanted, you know, to be in shape for my boo and the boo ain't there no more. Well, what's the motivation now? Mm. Or do you even care that much? Maybe you don't. It's happened to me several times where I check in on things like the bigger picture of my life. And I'm like, I don't even really care about that. Like, why am I stressing out about not achieving a goal that I don't even really care about anymore? This is no longer important to me. And having the courage to let things go and not feel this pressure like, well, I said I was going to do it, so I have to do it and I'm a failure if I don't. No, like, you're in charge. You get to decide when something doesn't work for you anymore and you get to change it. That's really the beauty of being a person who's self-directed.
Mm. Now, do you believe it's possible for people to know their values and their goals and still struggle with efficiency?
Yes, because there's a huge gap between knowing and doing. I think the doing is an actual muscle. The other thing is a lot of times when people set a really big goal of, you know, I'm going to be a millionaire, I'm going to start a company or whatever, they don't take the time to reverse engineer it, right? And so every time they look at that goal on paper or wherever, they're like, this feels overwhelming, or it feels like something they're going to get to eventually because it's such a big task. So they start to procrastinate because they're like, well, I don't know what to do yet, or I don't know the right people, or I don't have enough information. I need to do some more research. And then they get into analysis paralysis. So my thing is always, 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 if you have a vision and you create a goal from that vision, then you need a plan. And that plan needs to be broken up into the tiniest, and I do mean the tiniest of action steps, because that's how you keep yourself from procrastinating out of overwhelm. So if I say by this time next year, I have this goal, my first question to myself is, what needs to happen every quarter? What needs to happen every month? What needs to happen every week? What needs to happen next week in order for me to do that? Because that way, when I wake up on Wednesday, I'm not trying to figure out how I will become a millionaire. I'm just remembering I need to transfer $500 to my Vanguard index fund. That's it. Like, make it easy for yourself to win on your own terms. And I'm just constantly setting up hacks so that I can stay in action.
Now, go ahead.
The one thing I was going to add there is I also think, and I try to share with folks, it's it's funny the questions that people ask me. It still hilarious me that people would listen to me, period. And is to not be so hard on yourself and don't judge yourself. I think we're really hard on ourselves, which creates that paralysis by analysis type of thing that we've talked on the show a lot, where it's like, well, I have to think of this really lofty, meme-worthy Facebook status update justification for doing this. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, not really. I mean, no one knows beyond you. I'm like, if money motivates you, women motivate you, you know, whatever motivates you, let it motivate you. Like, and you don't have to share it. I think that this oversharing creates this false sense of accountability. Like, I'm going to share what I think people want to hear, but it doesn't really motivate me. Thus, you are no further towards achieving that goal. Yes. And I'm going to walk through these. So I looked over it while we were talking here. So it's six sources of influence. I want folks to know I didn't make this up. This kind of bothers me. Rich knows this. And it's from the influencer book. But those things are, it's broken into structure, social, personal. And number one is make the undesirable desirable. And I think these are things we talked about. They just gave a concept model for it. Number two, overinvest in skill building, so training your ability. Harness peer pressure, which maybe the social media can contribute to. Find strength in numbers. Number five is design rewards and demand accountability, which I think we're talking about here. And six is change the environment, which I think ties into building your mindset or that hobby so that it becomes habitual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go ahead, Lisa.
No, I was just going to say that to the point of what you were saying about being hard on ourselves. The other thing is like being comfortable with being imperfect and failing, because that's the other thing is like if you have this is the gift and curse of social media, too, because a lot of times we look at other people's highlight reels and we're like, dang, that person is killing it. They're crushing it. Everything is coming together for them. And I don't even know how to put together this Word document to describe what I want to do. But it's like that you have to be comfortable with that awkwardness and understand that like what other people think of you is none of your business. Stop judging yourself, but also just know like you're going to fail. Like a certain amount of things are just not going to work out. And once you get comfortable with that, then you allow yourself to speed up the process because you're not obsessing over how you look and what this person thinks. Because if you're coming from a place of service and a really authentic reason for doing what you're doing, then you're not worried about that anyway, because you're more interested in the outcome.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is something that I've struggled with for years, and it's insane. And I sometimes tell the story of, you know, how we've been podcasting for 3 years, but a lot of people don't know that we had a show before this show that we did for like 2 years. And we talked about a little bit of everything, which was fine. You know, I think we were able to do well with that because of the chemistry that we have. And that's not just me saying it. Like people have said that about the podcast. But I think when we first started, the goal was always to focus on talking about work and money, but we felt that we had to talk about all these other topics because that's what was in and that's what was being reflected on social media. The conversations that we saw around us were about other things than what we actually cared about. And so even if it wasn't conscious, there was some type of subconscious pressure to try to appease everybody. And that's something that I've even done with my own projects over the years. You know, I've watched peers go off and do different things and I'm like, oh, that's dope. They're really rising. Maybe I should be doing something more like that. Or man, I see everybody really gravitating toward this person and I'm sitting here with like one like. So, you know, maybe I need to start trying to do something more in that direction and then switch and bring people back. And I've just found that that never works.
Yeah, there's two great books on this topic. One is called Status Anxiety. It's by Alain de Botton. I've done a whole episode of my show on it because I love it so much.
That's a fancy name.
I think that, isn't it? I was like, okay, Alain de Botton. It really deals with the fact that social media has created this new kind of status anxiety in all of us. And it goes through the whole history of status and how it started and how it's evolved and how now it's more so, you know, likes and the impression that we're able to create in the minds of other people about how successful we are, how desirable we are, and all these kinds of things. And the other one is a book called Deep Work by Cal Newport, where he just talks about eliminating the distractions, getting clear about what your actual work is, and then going as deep as you can with it to the exclusion of all the other bull crap that gets in the way. And to your point, it's one of those things where a lot of times we don't appreciate timing, that somebody is rising or having a moment because it's their time. and that your time is going to come also if you are consistent, because we know most people toil in obscurity for 10 or 15 years and then they get a break and now everyone knows who they are and it looks easy and effortless. I just had Simone Missick on Behind the Brilliance. She's the star of the new Luke Cage series. She plays Misty Knight. And this chick, no one knew who she was for 11 years. Like, she talked about how she stopped even telling people she was an actress because she was so broke and she was not booking anything. Like, she was embarrassed to tell people that she was that. So she was just saying she was a teacher, but she just kept going and she kept working on her craft. And then this audition comes along, she books this, and now she's just, you know, people all over the world know who she is because she's a part of this Marvel franchise and she's going to continue to eat off of being this superhero. So it's really important to understand, I think, timing, but I also think this underscores the necessity of falling in love with your work and not the accolades and star power that comes with shine from doing well at what you do. Like, some people are more interested in being in the magazine and getting the likes than they are the actual craft of what they do. And those are always the people that are like a flash in the pan.
That's nice. Where's my soundboard? this is worth a flex bomb and some air horns.
So, yeah, I didn't want to be cliche, but I think it does tie together. So I try to share with the folks like the little exercise. And I think we've done a lot here. I hope there's I know there are a lot of positive takeaways from this show. I hope you had your notepads out.
Damn right.
But one that I'm doing right now, which Richard's aware of, is the positive affirmation. So I actually do. I'm almost embarrassed to say it, but like you said, I'm going to own it, own myself. Is I do collect some memes. I got like a little quote folder that I save. If I see something that either I want to share on the show or just has personal meaning to me, I'll go ahead and save it. And one that I saw recently, I think we might have put it on the pay balances at Instagram plug, was never give up on a dream just because of the time it will take to accomplish it. The time will pass anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause the other thing that happens, I don't know what the age demo is for your show, but I know that with my show, I think most of my listeners are between like 25 and 45. Same. And there is this, and social media is the curse with this obsession with, well, I didn't make this 30 under 30 list and I didn't have a house by 35. And I'm like, who came up with these arbitrary deadlines for these things that we want to accomplish? And what are you going to do with the rest of your life if you did everything by 30? Like, you're going to be bored. If you don't have any other goals to work toward. And so it's like, one of the things I talked about on one episode was how you need to create milestones. Like, let that be a milestone on the way to somewhere else. Have some type of bigger thing that you aspire to so that you're not constantly going off of the cliff. The other thing is like borrowing time from the future. I think that a lot of people in this demo are feeling anxiety because they have so many things they want to do. Like, well, should I focus on buying a house first or starting my business first? Or should I focus on getting a promotion or getting married? And it's like, you have, just relax. You have time. Like, also, we're all going to die, just so that we're clear. I think some people think if they accomplish enough, they'll get to live forever. It's like, no, you're going to effing die. And it's, it probably won't really matter in the grander scheme of the universe that you even existed. So to that degree, I'm just saying, like, realistically speaking, what I'm saying? Like, is statistically, there are very few people that are truly going to change the trajectory of the human race, right? Mm. So to that degree, all of the worry and stress and anxiety is just not worth it. Like, if you can't find a way to enjoy the journey to your success, then you got to find another way to orient yourself toward your work and what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, I had a hiring manager share something with me that was kind of eye-opening because I'm a hiring manager now, is I don't hire people that stop learning at 4 years. So I was like, should we weigh people based on bachelor degree, master degree? How should I, scale this out? He's like, I look for people who learn over 40 years. And I was like, And I had never like taken that mindset, not only in application to how I'm reviewing candidates, but really how I look at my own life. Cause I'm like, I graduated, I'm done. I'm done with this learning thing. I had someone tell me I was looking to go to graduate school. They're like, I'll never take another standardized test so long as I shall live. And I'm like, I respect that, but I'm not done learning. Right. And so I get it, but it's going back to finding what motivates you. But I also think people try to fit themselves in these cliche silos or buckets, like, okay, I'm going to go to school for 12 years and then I'm going to get my graduate degree in 4 years. And by 25, I'm going to buy the house and home and the white picket fence. And at 30, I'm going to be on the 30 by 30 list. And I'm like, who made these up? Why?
Who made these up? And guess what? If you're 40 talking about you was on 30 on the 30 list, it's like the person who still talking about their glory days in high school or college. It's like after the fact, it won't even matter.
It's so funny you say that because I always think about when I go home and someone's like, yo, you remember that time I dunked in that game in high school in 1999? I'm like, yeah, but
that's exactly what it is. But Marcus, to your point, I was listening to Matt Mullenweg on a podcast the other day. This guy who created Automattic, which is behind WordPress, which obviously powers like 28% of the web or something like that. And the question was, you know, what do you look for when you're hiring people? And he said four things I thought were amazing and so spot on. They were work ethic, taste, integrity, and curiosity. Work ethic, taste, integrity, and curiosity. And to your point, I think that curiosity piece is so important. It's what keeps you learning. And I don't know that people realize that if you can make a commitment to being a lifelong learner, your life will unfold in such amazing ways. Like when people are like, well, I don't really have time to read. If you read 10 pages a day, on average, you can finish a book a month. And that means that in 5 years, you will have read 60 books. And I guarantee you that if you read 60 books in the next 5 years, you will not be the same person that you would be otherwise. You will inevitably be more successful. And at the very least, you'll be a better communicator, which contributes to your success. So it's like, it doesn't have to mean that you spend your entire Sunday reading books cover to cover. It can just be a little hinge that swings a big door.
Man, yo, that is so true. That's so
true. I'm sitting out. The reason I was quiet, I was like staring up, reflecting. I'm like, 10 pages a day.
Yo, I definitely leaned back in my chair and was trying to not have it creak. I was like, 10 pages, huh?
I was like, can they hear me stroking my beard? Let me move away from the mic.
Most great books that can truly enrich your life are not more than 300 pages, right? They usually clock in around 200, 250 pages. So in 30 days, you can finish one if you read 10 pages a day. And who doesn't? If you don't have time to read 10 pages a day, then you don't really want it. So let's just all forget about it. Like, you have time, even if it's during your lunch break, even if it's while you're on the BART or on the MARTA or whatever, you have time to read 10 pages.
Yeah. I'd just like to point out that Debt Free or Die Trying is 76 pages. So 76 pages.
You know?
There's the plug. Right. There's the plug. But I realize we are at that time in the show, and this has been so awesome. And I think I said beforehand when we were prepping that this is one of those shows that could go, and I was telling Marcus, I was like, this is one of those shows that could really go on forever because of the amount of bombs and knowledge and everything else that you shall droppeth on the people, to bring it back to Shakespeare, or is that from the Bible? I'm not sure. But Lisa, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. It has been an awesome time. Tell the good people where they can reach you and find you in all the magical places.
Well, first I have to say, thank you guys for having me and thank you for doing what you do. You are rare in this space. And I think that representation in general in all forms of media is very important. And for the two of you to be young Black men who are sharing this type of content is amazing. And I applaud you for it, because I know, as someone who's also not recapping whatever ratchet show, that it's not easy to put out this kind of content and be courageous about it. And so I just wanted to acknowledge and applaud you for that. You're welcome. I'm LisaNicoleBell.com. BehindTheBrilliance.com is where the podcast archive is. And I'm on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I'm at Lisa Nicole Bell. Say hello. You know, I'm not one of those people who's too cool to acknowledge people who reach out to me. I respond to comments and emails and things. So hit me up.
There we go. And of course, we want to thank everybody for listening to this episode. If you have topics you'd like to hear us cover or thoughts on this episode or beyond, you can email us at info@paychecksandbalances.com.
And I also want to share, because I've heard this a lot, first of all, thank you for those accolades, and I echo that back to you as well, that representation does matter. So for the folks that, if you're not seeing it be done, do it. Maybe you can be that representation that matters. And don't forget to join our email list, where we share top articles we read throughout the week, work and money tips, and more. You can sign up by visiting paychecksandbalances.com/email.
Cool. So again, we want to thank everyone for listening to this episode. Until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.